for a segment of Greening the Great Lakes within MSU Today. We're going to talk agriculture with good friend Jim Byram, who's president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. About every year at this time, we take a look at the prospects for agriculture, not only nationally, but in Michigan. And we're going to talk about 2019. Jim, welcome back to the program. Always great to see you.
Always great to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Jim, give us a snapshot. Agriculture has been much in the news in the last several months for all kinds of different reasons. We're going to look at some of these issues. But on the national front, a sort of a snapshot, where are we in 2019 nationally with this great agricultural industry?
Wish I knew. Frankly, we're facing some real challenges out here in the countryside. The trade discussions are ongoing, and that's causing some upheaval. Farm bill is passed, but currently we're in a government shutdown, so that's not an implementation phase at this point. Third, overall, production continues to increase, not just in the United States, but around the world. So we're seeing stocks around the world of commodities increase. We're seeing, of course, farmers want to be more efficient and produce more. The problem is that commodity prices are depressed, which is kind of a result of all of that, the lack of trade opportunities for some commodities and the tremendous production we achieve. So it's going to be a little bit of a mixed bag going into 2019, you know. I think the best way to look at 2019 is think about this time last year in 2018. We were optimistic about trade. We were shipping soybeans to China as fast as we could. The dry bean market was expanding around the world. We were doing things even into Brazil and South America, as well as our traditional customer base in the EU. Corn ethanol production was rocking and rolling, as it continues to be this year. But 2018 in January was a little bit different than January of 19 of this new year.
Well, you touched on a number of topics in that overview, Jim, that we want to zero in on a little bit. Let's start with something that I think generally most people in agriculture would look at as a positive, and that's the recent reauthorization of the Farm Bill, which was, again, one of those rare bipartisan things that every once in a while emerges out of Washington.
Well, it's fascinating. In June, July, August, it was a very contentious discussion on the Farm Bill. The House had passed their version of the Farm Bill, I think, by one or two votes. The Senate had passed theirs overwhelmingly, but the two bills were dramatically different. The November elections kind of sent a message which caused many on the House side. The House majority chair, of course, of the House Ag Committee, Mike Conaway, basically backed down on a lot of the things he was demanding, and the final Farm Bill wound up looking an awful lot like the Senate version, the original Senate version, which a lot of folks don't pay attention to this as much as I do or some of us directly related to or directly involved in D.C. lobbying, but Debbie Stabenow has really been a champion for Michigan and for negotiating what is in that Farm Bill. I mean, it's ironic if you look back at what her priorities were when she started the discussion 3 and 4 years ago. It's there. It's in the Farm Bill. And frankly, the Senate bill, as it passed, Senator Pat Roberts, the chair of the committee, and Senator Stabenow have a great relationship, and they were lockstep on getting things done. The Farm Bill passed the Senate and the House both by unprecedented margins for that particular piece of legislation. What an 800-page piece of legislation. Passed overwhelmingly, bipartisan. President signed it. Everything's great, and it's looking good, except we just can't implement it because the USDA today is shut down. But Senator Stabenow has been protecting Michigan agriculture and focused on Michigan agriculture from the initial efforts in her political career. So it's been really interesting to watch her be our champion over the last several years, as she continues to be.
Our listeners may not be aware, but one of the reasons that bipartisan support comes together on the Farm Bill is that it combines more traditional agricultural programs with nutrition, like the SNAP program. Enlighten our listeners a little bit about how that works.
Well, the SNAP program is about 75% or 80% of the Farm Bill, but SNAP is basically what people used to call food stamps, and it provides opportunity for lower-income folks to buy fresh food and buy foodstuffs and pursue nutrition. The irony is many in agriculture deride that program because they say it's welfare, it's a handout. We tend to view it as, hey, it's a market development opportunity. It allows people to buy more healthier food products than maybe they would buy otherwise. otherwise. The traditional farm bill side of it, the traditional ag side, of course, includes all sorts of things like crop insurance, conservation title, rural development, as well as farm support programs like the dairy program, which is much needed right now, and other things that support the commodity programs. But SNAP became a bone of contention and probably didn't really need to be, because there really wasn't much change in how SNAP is being applied and the rules being applied today, again, in a farm bill that passed overwhelmingly.
We're talking 2019 Agricultural Outlook with Jim Byram, president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. Jim, you mentioned the government shutdown. As we tape this interview, the government is shut down. What kind of deleterious effects does that have on agriculture?
Well, it's almost a rolling snowball going downhill. Initially, it wasn't very much because the government continued to operate. Farm Service Agency offices stayed open till the end of December, but now they're closed. Farmers could apply, for example, for their trade adjustment payments, the soybean payments, up until the Farm Service Agency offices closed, and they did close the end of December, so some of those that needed to apply for those payments haven't done so or aren't able to do so. The irony is the percentage that's caught in that quandary is probably relatively low, because you did have to sell your soybean crop in order to apply for the fund. Most had done that before the end of December, but there's some caught there. Third, we're a little concerned about some inspections. They're happening, but it's starting to become a little bit more of an issue. You know, as you dawn January of a new year, farmers start to think about financing. And, you know, I know that the lenders also look at the USDA providing guarantee loans, and that whole system is shut down. And we're now on day 10, and you know, while day 10 in the new year may not see a lot of those applications out there yet, there is always a lot of background work that's being done, and that's not happening right now. We're seeing some other things like that. The critical functions in place, like food inspections, et cetera, are happening. But as those folks miss the paycheck on Friday, they may take a different view of going to work. I'm fearful of that. We're seeing some of that happen in some other agencies, like a TSA for air travel, that folks are saying, look, we ain't getting paid. Why am I going to work? Now, ultimately, they probably will get the money, but an awful lot of folks need the paycheck every couple weeks to make sure they can continue their lifestyle. So we're going to continue to see the snowball roll downhill as long as the government shut down, and that's going to be an issue. The other piece that's, I think, more important than the government shutdown that this whole issue is bringing to the fore is that Michigan agriculture and many in agriculture rely on migrant workers. Unemployment's very low here. We are seeing fewer and fewer and fewer folks willing to come here from the South to engage primarily in agricultural activities that we need done, like planting, harvesting, pruning, whatever it may be, participating in some of the work crews for nursery stock and landscaping, whatever it may be. We're seeing fewer numbers all the time of those folks willing or interested to do those sorts of things. So it's ultimately going to be a real challenge for us in agriculture. There's always the equal and opposite reaction to an action. And this action is going to cause folks, I think, some further challenges. You know, the comments that we hear from the border, actually, interestingly enough, are that there's fewer and fewer people trying to cross or coming into the United States literally every day. And so while the president's saying it's a crisis, we'll let him defend his choice of views on that situation. But we are seeing the actual statistics from the government saying there's less folks coming in. So that doesn't bode well for us on getting certain specialty crops in the ground, handled, and harvested.
For this special Greening the Great Lakes segment within MSU Today, I'm talking with Jim Byram, president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association, Outlook for Agriculture 2019. Jim, you've mentioned it several times, the trade issue with China, the tariff wars going on, no end in sight as we speak. What kind of an impact has that had in 2018 on agriculture nationally?
Well, there's an awful lot of soybeans sitting in bins and piles in the United States that probably were headed to China that aren't headed there. China's come back in the market. They're starting to buy some. The challenge is that even though they're back in the market, and that's really good, they're buying at very low values because the prices are so depressed. The supply chain is so backed up that there were some situations in the Dakotas in particular where some of that crop was actually left in the field. We're seeing storage filled to capacity with soybeans. So even if the Chinese and the United States agreed to, hey, let's all go back in our corners and be happy, it would take a solid 6 to 9 months before that supply chain was active and working again. You can't just dial 1-800 and get a new ship to show up at a port to load with soybeans in Portland. And oh, by the way, you have to get the soybeans there from the Midwest. And so there's a train issue, there's a vessel issue, there's a crew issue, and it's kind of all backing up and has backed up. So even if it was solved today, it wouldn't be solved. Finally, it's also interesting to note that in China, primarily that soybean meal is fed in the pork industry. Pork industry is in trouble in China because of Asian swine flu, and that has shut down an awful lot of those pork production facilities, which means their demand's a little less. Now, we're shipping a few more soybeans to the EU. That's great, but it's a fraction of what we were shipping to China. The other piece that's interesting is the unintended consequences we're seeing around the world. The steel and aluminum tariffs imposed by the president caused retaliatory tariffs from virtually every country where they were imposed. That means that the navy beans we normally ship to the EU, either to Italy or the UK, they're facing a 25% tariff, so that caused some real angst. They're working through it. Both suppliers and buyers on the other end are working through it. But as those buyers look at 2019 supply, if they can buy it where there's not a 25% tariff, they're gonna look at those options. Now, the thing that folks don't think about is that we have become a real source of enjoyment for competitors. Because while we may have a 25% tariff on product X going to country Y, if you're country C that supplies that same product and you're going to that country, you can raise your price 20% for no reason whatsoever and actually garner that additional profit, which we can't here. We're also seeing some challenges of availability of supplies, and that's, we're talking about some steel issues, some aluminum issues coming in. We're seeing domestic producers actually of steel and aluminum doing pretty well. But again, as we hear from suppliers all over the country, gee, they did the same thing. Those domestic steel and aluminum suppliers raised their prices 23 or 24%, which is great for them, not so great for those on the other end. We are also seeing and hearing about a lot of consumer price increases on products all across the board, which is ultimately not going to bode well for inflation.
Jim, you mentioned the EU and how they're adjusting. It almost seems, and I don't mean to get political here, but these tariffs have created the opportunity for a lot of our traditional trading partners to get creative at our expense, no longer looking at the United States so much as sort of the balance wheel of the trade zodiac, but as an anomaly.
Well, the challenge is we're not being looked at the top of the list. For example, in the Far East and the Southeast Asia, all those countries actually signed the TPP, or what TPP-2 was, while we did not. We withdrew from that, one of the first actions of President Trump. The irony is that all those countries signed those agreements. They also are signing agreements with the EU. Many of the countries that we traditionally viewed as major export opportunities now have agreements with 30 other countries, the entire European Union, the remaining TPP countries in the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, ex-US, and all those countries are looking at substantially reduced tariffs. While we aren't experiencing that and aren't enjoying that. Now, there's negotiations ongoing, of course, today even with China. There's discussions going to start with Japan. There's discussions going to start with the EU. There's discussions going to start with the UK. Those discussions normally don't get resolved in a couple days. They normally will take months, if not years. I know that this is an expedited situation, but during that time, these other countries are enjoying better deals from our competitors than we can offer.
Speaking of deals, NAFTA has been replaced by something called, I think, the Canada-Mexico-United States Trade Agreement, which the president has been touting, but which is, to this point has not yet been approved by Congress. Is it basically the same thing that NAFTA was? Were there any significant improvements?
There were improvements in certain areas, like using electronic transmission of data, things like that, electronic certificates, as opposed to everything having to be hard copied or faxed, which most companies don't even own a fax machine anymore, those kinds of things. So there were some improvements. Basically, it's the same thing. There were some minor, very minor changes on dairy exports to Canada. But the irony is the approval process has become much more dicey with the Democrats taking control of the House. I remember when NAFTA was originally approved, it was a very, very controversial agreement, primarily on labor treatment in Mexico, environmental issues in Mexico, and then there's the issues of how we're getting along with Canada these days. The irony is that both Canada and Mexico, Canada specifically said we aren't going to approve it until the U.S. Congress approves it. U.S. Congress, I think there's some optimism in some quarters, and there's others that are saying this could be a long pull. Even though the United States Mexico-Canada agreement, USMCA, is out there, it's not a done deal at this point, I don't think.
My guest is Jim Byram, president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. We've talked about a lot of problems in agriculture that need to get resolved. Jim, let's talk about some positives in Michigan with some new processing facilities.
You know, there's some things happening here that are absolutely going to help. I mean, you know, certainly there's a lot of additional dairy processing coming online. There's a new plant in Greenville, a new plant being built in St. John's that's probably 18 to 24 months out before it'll be accepting its first load. There's some other things happening in the Thumb, we understand. But so there's more dairy processing. But at the same time that's happening, production per cow continues to increase. We're seeing an increasing and rapidly increasing consolidation in the dairy industry. They're getting bigger across the board. And some of those big folks are looking at opportunities with these new processing plants that they'll have more to sell. The one challenge in the dairy industry in particular is there really are cost efficiencies with large production. And that's a challenge to the industry that really hasn't been monetized in some of those operations. The new soybean plant in Zeeland will come online probably third quarter of 19. They'll probably be accepting new crop soybeans this year. That's a big deal. That could help boost the price of soybeans, narrow the basis, if you will, by 25 to 40 cents a bushel. That's a big deal. Processing it here rather than hauling them south and then bringing meal back to Michigan to feed livestock, that's a really interesting opportunity. But as you look at that, it's going to potentially change some of the other crop decisions that farmers make. Do you grow dry beans that aren't hedgeable, or do you grow soybeans that you can hedge and deliver locally? Those kinds of decisions are going to be made by farmers, you know, some this year in 19, but I think more so in out years, 2021, 22. But as we look to the future, some of that processing here is going to be very, very important. I mean, ethanol production. Every ethanol plant in Michigan has expanded, so there's more corn demand here, expanded or increased efficiency. They produce more ethanol per bushel. We have one plant in Michigan that buys about 17% of the entire corn crop in Michigan, or 7% rather, the entire corn crop in Michigan. That's a big deal. Those plants are very important, and certainly that industry is rocking and rolling at this point and looking pretty positive.
And then I've been reading the pork processing facility down near Coldwater. I know it's been up and going for a while, but are they talking about adding another shift?
Well, they'd like to add another shift. They'd like to make sure that they optimize the asset that they have. The challenge is that an awful lot of that pork, maybe not from that particular plant, but plants around the country, was exported to China. And I think there's been some hiccups in some of that market. But at the same time, with the Chinese ASF problem, they are importing pork. They probably will be importing more, but I also have read and heard that the Chinese, because of that problem and the widespread knowledge of that problem in the country, in China, that there's a major switch from pork to poultry, to chicken and turkey. So we'll see how that all plays out long term. But, you know, there is a lot of interest in increasing and expanding the plant in Coldwater and going to a second shift, and that means more hogs, more production, and eating more corn and soybean meal in Michigan.
You know, you've said this before, and you hear this quite a bit, but does Michigan's diversity of agriculture help buffer our state compared to, like, maybe the Iowas and Indianas and Illinois of the world when it comes to the agricultural economy?
There's no question about it. I mean, our critter numbers here have expanded dramatically. That's important, and that's dairy, and you know, even the layer industry and the pork industry, and you know, that's important that you consume some of the stuff here. That helps markets. Certainly, livestock, commodity production, but dry beans, sugar beets, wheat, fruit crops, vegetable crops, all that sort of thing. Diversity is absolutely critical, and one of the challenges is times get tough, you know, and we're currently in some pretty tough economic times. Farmers might look at restricting some of that exposure to some of those markets that might be specialty markets because they may not be able to guarantee a price for some of those crops. So, but we strongly encourage folks to continue to pursue diversity. Sugar beets have been a great option in the Thumb and Saginaw Valley forever. Dry beans are important. White wheat is even a specialty crop these days, but wheat overall as a crop is important around the country, and we have a lot of milling capacity in Michigan. We need to meet that demand. Diversity is critical. We're not a central Illinois state. If we think we're going to compete with central Illinois with corn and soybean production and yields, we're probably pretty challenged.
Jim, as we conclude this interview, and I'm talking with Jim Byram, president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association, MABA and your the group Agricultural Leaders of Michigan, ALM, which you've spearheaded for some time now, very keen on sustainable agricultural practices. Call it green agriculture, call it sustainable agriculture, particularly water quality, water management. Talk to us a little bit about the importance of sustainable agricultural practices, given the importance of the growing importance of water.
Well, it's water, air, energy efficiency, all sorts of things. And sustainability, you know, 5-10 years ago was kind of a buzzword. Today, it's a way of doing business. We're seeing folks more and more concerned about their energy use, more and more concerned about their impact on water, certainly very concerned about meeting customer demand. And as we talk about customer demand today, sustainability goals and sustainability objectives are being driven by the customer base. A lot of folks like to refer to, you know, the government regulation is changing agriculture. We're seeing more change coming from the folks that buy what we produce. To minimize or optimize fertilizer use, we like to say, as opposed to over-fertilizing, minimizing pesticide use, integrated pest management, all sorts of things such as that. Basically, everything attached to sustainability. And sustainability doesn't mean do it cheaper. It just means watching how you do it and making sure you keep records of it. The irony is when we talk about green and sustainable, we're going to give out something like 90 awards next week to sustainable and green agribusinesses who really are focused on those kinds of activities. Energy efficiency, reducing energy use, optimizing fertilizer use, variable rate fertilizer application, making sure that farmers approach the optimized production targets and goals, optimizing profit opportunities, while at the same time meeting objectives of those customers. And it is important to note that customers are also demanding some different things than what we do, whether it's potentially reduce pesticide use or eliminate pesticide use for organic production, whether it's non-GMO production. You know, Barry Finchbaum with Kansas State always had a great line: if folks want to pay the money, grow it. And that in Michigan is what we're able to do, whereas some other states can't. So meeting some of those unique demands is going to be really important as we go forward in the next few years.
Last question, Jim. We have a new administration in Lansing. Fix the damn roads was one of the mantras. In my view, some progress was made in the last couple of years of the Snyder administration, especially on roads, but there's a lot more on infrastructure that needs to be done. You've been hammering on that for years. Railways, harbors, bridges, roads, the whole thing. Where do you see us going? Are we willing to pay for infrastructure in Michigan? Are we going to be able to ramp up what we really need to do with respect to the total infrastructure picture?
Well, to pay, you got to have money. If there's going to be an appetite to create a fund of money, or whether it's a bond proposal or a big bond proposal for infrastructure, that's going to be critical. You know, we like to talk these days about changing how we do some things, you know, taking some of the traffic off the roads. And I'm not talking about heavy trucks. I'm talking about just overall freight movement. We don't use the water in Michigan hardly at all. We should. The other irony is that we're seeing an awful lot more agricultural good moved by truck, whether it's corn going to ethanol plants, plants or soybeans that will ultimately be going to the soybean plant, we need to figure out and invest and incentivize producers and handlers and the end users to create the movement by rail, by whether it's a 15-car unit, whatever it is, because taking all those soybeans or corn by those units, those smaller unit on rail, is more efficient, and it also reduces a whole lot of trucks on the road. We have one situation where we have several situations where we know of literally hundreds of trucks have to go into facilities every week. If we could minimize that, that'd be a great start as well. But we need to focus not just on roads, but fix the damn roads, but let's figure out how to handle our infrastructure and handle our logistics more efficiently.
Yeah, and infrastructure also includes water lines and sewer lines and other things that we can talk about some other time. Pardon the metaphor, but Jim, we've covered a lot of ground here this morning. Appreciate your time. I've been talking Agriculture 2019 with Jim Byram, president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association. Jim, like you said at the beginning of the interview, it's going to be an interesting year.
Well, and I say that every year. It's an interesting year because it's a unique year because it's unlike any other. But the challenges we have in Michigan are intense. There are challenges in agriculture all across the country. The irony is our diversity, the innovative spirit and the creativity of Michigan producers and the industry, the willingness to invest and the willingness to look at new market opportunities is what's going to continue to make agriculture successful in this state.
And you heard it here from Jim Byram, president of the Michigan Agribusiness Association, for this special segment of Greening the Great Lakes in MSU Today.